This episode is brought to you by Fat Expats. It's the new expat magazine that's coming your way next month. If you'd like to find out more about it, head over to twofatexpats.com. You'll see a pop-up and you can sign up and we'll shoot you some information. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
Well, I'm still fever-free, Kirsty Wright, and I'm back from an international trip, which was quite surreal.
Oh, I saw your international trip. Now, I gather you're talking about you drove your husband back to Denmark, and it looked like you'd gone to a whole new world. Did I see you were out at a restaurant for dinner?
I was at a restaurant for dinner with no mask. Now, to be fair to Germany, restaurants have opened in the last week here, but I hadn't been to one here. The whole different world experience started at the border when we rolled into the Danish border, because in Germany they don't care if you're trying to leave. They only care, obviously, if you're trying to get into another side. So the way you go from Germany to Denmark in this case is on a ferry. So on the German side, they let you on the ferry, and on the Danish side, you roll up to a policeman. And if he says no, you turn around and get the ferry back, I imagine. And so it was a bit nerve-wracking because, to be perfectly honest, now I'm safely back in Germany, I can say I don't actually have any right at the moment to be in Denmark. My husband does because he's a resident, but I was kind of an also-ran. So it was touch and go whether they're going to let me in if you read all the rules and regulations.
You were an expat appendage.
I was an appendage with no residency in Copenhagen. Anyway, so we rolled up to the guy, a big border guy wearing no mask. He indicates we should roll the window down. We roll the window down. He leans into the car with his unmasked face and starts close talking to us. And it is honestly the most bizarre feeling after spending so many weeks and at this stage months socially distancing and staying far from people. And if you're closer to people and in public and speaking to people you don't know, usually doing that with a mask. It was really weird.
I thought in a stereotypical world, aren't the Danes known for like not wanting to be close to each other and feeling more comfortable having at least a meter or two in between them, even in pre-COVID times?
I don't actually know the answer to that. They're certainly not like the Southern Europeans and hugging and kissing three times when they meet everybody. But it was just quite off-putting, and I could see my husband sort of shrinking back into the car seat because the guy was on his side of the car, and I was thinking,
stand back.
I know how you feel, buddy. I know how you feel. Anyway, he said, so my husband showed all his paperwork and said, and this is my wife. I said, well, the guy looks at me and says, you don't need a wife. I said, no, here's my passport. I said, I suppose this isn't the time to be joking. He said, well, you're Australian and we're in Denmark, so you can joke. And then he said,
"And we love Australian wives in Denmark, don't we?"
Mary. It was just, I guess the thing is, he looked at us and he thought, "Well, you've got Australian passports. What the hell are you doing here? Like, it's not like you just came from Australia, so it's probably legitimate that you're here."
And you didn't drive here from Australia, that's for sure.
That's for sure.
Okay, Nikki, let's move on to four fat expat questions. So I'm going to kick off, Nikki. I want you to picture this. You've spent weeks planning your exit. You're moving. You're leaving one country. You're going to another. You've done a massive Marie Kondo and you've taken special care to decide what you can't live without and what you're happy to give away. The packers come to your house. They make notes. You label boxes in a certain way. And then you watch that very last box get loaded onto the truck. 8 weeks later, you find out that your container has fallen off the ship and into the drink. It's gone. What do you do?
Drink. Find the closest bar. Resist the temptation to burn the list of items that were on your container that you're never going to see again. Grieve. Call a therapist. Start the grief process. Get started. Get a kickstart on the four stages. I mean, I don't really know. I mean, theoretically, everything that is absolutely essential in your world, you take with you on your person. So your go bag equivalent comes with you. And your family,
yes,
the people and the animals, that whatever, if they can't come mm-hmm. with you, they come soon after, and they don't go in a container. So you have to say, at the end of the day, if we've got our health and each other, but geez, that's tough, really tough. Has it just happened to someone you know, Kirsty? Is that what?
Well, I saw it in our group, Nikki. I saw that someone had posted, you know, they'd seen that there had been a container fall off the side of a ship. Well, there's several containers, not just one, several. And I was thinking about it because someone posted it saying, oh, let's just hope it's, you know, not full of anything, whatever. And I was thinking, oh, my gosh, can you imagine in these times, in these particular times that we live in, you've lost your job or you've been moved to wherever because of corona.
Oh, God.
You're doing, you're doing your quarantine. All of these things are happening. And then, oh, and by the way, your shipment's in the drink.
What would you do, Kirsty? What would you think you would do?
Really, most of the really important stuff should be in your go bag. So if there is grandma's, you know, ring or whatever, that should be with you. I don't know about you, Nikki, but do you wear it all on the plane when you're doing that big exit? Because I tend to have it all on me.
Yeah, I do. I tend to carry I don't have a lot of very valuable things, but yes, I take them with me. And yeah,
me too. I don't have a lot of very valuable things, but I did pick up the old push present from every baby that, you know, is a nice.
Well, and you've had four, so there you go.
Yes, so I'm wearing all of those, I can tell you. You know, I'm in that situation now, Nikki, where everything's in Doha. You know, I have a whole house full of stuff in Doha, and it has crossed my mind several times of what if I didn't get back there. I mean, obviously the most important thing is the dog, the beagle, and I can't get her here because she's 17 and can't make the flight, and it just wouldn't be fair. So, but she's very well looked after in case anyone's thinking the beagle's sitting there feeding herself.
By herself.
She is very well.
Okay.
She's going for walks. She's very much loved. Look, there was one piece of advice that I thought was really good when on the Facebook group someone had told about the story of the container falling. Was James had said he was often told that when you're moving, you insure for a total loss because it's easy to proof. Don't insure for damages. Insuring for damages is considered a total sort of waste of time and money. So you should insure for a total loss, which I thought was really good advice. So don't go for the damages, go for a total loss when you're doing that insurance. Assume that you're losing the lot, that it's not just going to get salty and damp and moldy.
So on that, Kirsty, so related, segueing, all that kind of stuff. So how long would you keep something in long-term storage before you A, gave it up and gave it away, or B, sent it to your destination or another destination? And why did you choose what you chose?
I would not put anything in storage, I think, after 20 years of expat life. I have just met so many people. I don't know about you, Nikki. I'm busting to hear your answer. But for me, I've met so many people that have paid a freaking fortune in long-term storage and got there and gone, it was all crap. I didn't want any of it. Like once I saw it, I didn't want any of it. I couldn't remember what. So many people go, I can't even remember what's in there. And then they get in there and they realize, oh, it's the blender that we got as our wedding present 20 years ago. Definitely no. Choose what is sentimental or incredibly expensive and take it with you or donate and give away. But, yeah, I would not advise anyone to do long-term storage. Have you done long-term storage, Nikki?
I'll tell you my story in a minute, but I just want to say on that, a lot of people say, but the company's going to pay for it.
Yes.
It's no cost to us because the company, it's part of our package that the company will pay for it. Let me tell you, when you leave Australia for 3 years and the company pays for it for 3 years, and then 15 years later you have three companies in and four countries down, it doesn't matter if the company pays for it.
Yeah.
One, they won't be paying for it anymore. Sure as anything, I can tell you that. And the other thing is you still won't care. But I have to say, my baby group in Australia, so I left Australia with a a 9-month-old baby. So I did a baby group before I left. And in our baby group, shout out to Claire and Lexi, was the owner of one of the largest storage places in Australia.
Ooh.
And he said to me, at one of our sort of dad's come along sessions, he said to me, don't leave anything. Use it or lose it. He said, we make all our money from people like you. People. And then all we do is they call us 10 years later and say, get a skiff for me, can you? You know, and they come to their storage and they just go from storage to skiff.
Yeah.
And then they have to pay for the skiff to go to the rubbish, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
So we moved from Australia to Hong Kong with a 20-foot container. And then when we left Hong Kong, we had a 40-foot container because a la Indonesia, in Hong Kong you also buy furniture.
Yes.
Furniture items. And I was thinking today when I read this question, we still do have a few items from the beginning. But we still just have a 40-foot container. And when we were leaving the US, the guy said, I don't know if you're going to make it. I said, it has to fit in a 40-foot container. I'm not taking anything bigger than that or more.
Okay, Nikki, I have a question about online shopping for you. Tell me who's the company that you provide you with the best online shopping, particularly in this COVID time, because I think everybody moved very much to online shopping. But have you had one shop that you've kind of relied on your entire expat life, or has it kind of evolved and changed over the years?
Well, I have been wondering when the Instagram challenge is hashtag all the things I bought during the corona crisis, and you have to have a pile of everything you've bought and put it in the middle of a room or a table, and then people take photos. And I think that hashtag would blow up Twitter or Instagram. Come on, sorry, hashtag everything I bought during lockdown,
yeah,
during ISO, during something. I want to say for us, Amazon.de is really, which is Germany, is our go-to for most things, I have to say, because of the Amazon platform. And I know that Amazon is very controversial in terms of being an online purchasing platform, but I have to admit that we still use it extensively.
Mm-hmm.
I made a list of everything that I've bought on Amazon since lockdown.
Oh, wow.
And... and I'll have to tell you, here it is. So Asics shoes, not from Amazon, and Next pajamas, not from Amazon. My daughter was getting sick of her day and evening pajamas. She needed new ones. But from Amazon, socks, door stoppers, a lighted up gaming keyboard, because my daughter realized that her keyboard on her laptop was inadequate to be gaming with, laptop risers, times two, whiteboard markers, yoga blocks, bandana set of 12, HDMI cable, there's a theme, a MacBook connector, reading glasses, a multi-country plug, because you can't ever have enough of those, apparently, if you're an expat. You'd think I'd have 10 that I could just whip out, masks, tea tree oil, and a movable whiteboard, which we bought sort of on the cusp. So we were already buying that, but it probably was the week we went into lockdown. So I have to be honest about that. And the first thing was a jar of Mrs. Ball's chutney, but I've yet to see that because obviously South Africa closed its borders and it never got here.
So Mrs. Ball's is South African?
Very good chutney from South Africa, Mrs. Ball's chutney. I can tell that there'll be people shouting, yes, that's my favourite. But that is all the things that we bought during lockdown. Now, that's the magic of buying most things from Amazon, and you can go and have a look. So I would say, look, the answer to your other question is no, I haven't had one. Well, because online shopping has evolved as we've been on our expat journey, Kirsty.
Yes.
I would say in Hong Kong, I did no online shopping. In South Africa, you could never be guaranteed of any mail arriving, parcel or letter.
Yes.
So you would never order anything delivered. So I would say my online shopping world just absolutely jumped to the next level when I went to the US, which is, of course, the mecca of all shopping, yes, including online shopping.
Yeah. See, I'm not an online shopper because, and I'm not being virtuous in any way. I think it's because I travel back and forth so much now and have for the last few years that they're really my need for online shopping has diminished, because it's always, I'll be back there in a few months' time. I can, you know, get whatever I need in a few months' time. Yeah, not a big one. Okay, Nikki, last question. I was interested in what extracurricular activities you've done by country. Like, have they been country specific? And sort of how did you find them? What have you done in the places you've lived?
Well, different things, I think. And
this is a grown-up question, not a kid question. It's what did you do? Yeah.
Yeah, no, what did I do? Yes. Look, it's by location. I think it's by situation and most probably also by time of life in a way. So in Hong Kong, I played hockey, which I hadn't done since school. So that was quite fun. And I did that in order to join the club. So if you're a sports member of the club, you get a member discount.
Yes.
So that was, I was the ticket into the club, so we could go to the club on weekends and holidays and whatever and use all the facilities, the great facilities at the Hong Kong Football Club. And I also did hiking because Hong Kong is, you know, actually a hugely green location. It's hard to imagine when you think of Hong Kong, the city, but it's the island is basically on the side of a mountain.
Yes.
There's loads of hiking and green spaces there.
I have a very fit and healthy brother-in-law who, of course, is, you know, Uncle Andrew, who managed to sort of get rid of about 45 kilos last year. And, yes, he runs and hikes and bikes all around Hong Kong, and which I see via Strava.
Yes.
You can follow him too if you like, Nikki. But, yeah, it is. It's a very green. While people talk about it being very concrete, you know, if you're living in apartments and whatever, their life does look very green and a lot of water views.
So I think they live in a very green area, Uncle Andrew and the gang. Anyway, so that was Hong Kong. So hockey and hiking. And every year a group of friends and I did something called the Green Power, which is a 50K hike from the peak in Hong Kong to a beach on one of the parts of the island. So it's quite amazing to think you can go 50 kilometres.
Wow.
Around Hong Kong Island without seeing any kind of thing, built up item, whatever, and just right, like up and down the whole way.
Yeah. Now I know in the US you're going to say it was tennis, and I'm pretty sure in South Africa you're going to say you surfed and you golfed. What is it in Germany?
Well, it's Cookbook Club and Frozen Shoulders, I have to tell you.
I still can't believe.
I've had two Frozen Shoulders.
I can't believe we have both had a frozen shoulder. And I mean, you out.
I've had two.
You out. You're definitely winning because you had two. But until I had a frozen shoulder, and for anyone who's out there going, what are they talking about? So when was mine, Nikki? I want to say mine was post breast cancer, right? So that breast cancer was 5 years ago. So maybe we're talking 4 years ago. I just suddenly started to get this awful ache and pain in my shoulder and then couldn't sleep on it, and then it just got worse and worse, and then all of a sudden you can't lift it and you're like, what is happening? And I can remember, you know, you saying to me, oh, I think you've got a frozen shoulder. My mum had a frozen shoulder. In fact, my mum had two, and me going, I cannot imagine this happening. And you said at the time, I don't even want to think about it because I live in fear that it will happen to me, meaning you. And sure enough, my frozen shoulder started to get better. And what did you get? You went out in sympathy. You got one
frozen
too.
Frozen shoulder.
And then you got two.
And then my other one froze while the other one was, yeah, no, it's been a nightmare. But getting back into this, my 50 days of walking 10 kilometers a day, I've started a little bit of running. And as you know, when you have a frozen shoulder, running is a little bit painful,
yes,
because the movement of the joint, etc. So I can tell that I have great mobility back, and I'm nearly 100% fixed on both sides because I can do a little bit of running and there's no pain in my shoulder, which is such an advance from a few months ago.
It's a real middle-aged woman thing, the old frozen shoulder, isn't it?
Well, you go to the Facebook group, frozen shoulder support group.
It's just full of middle-aged women. And my friend,
perimenopause.
Yeah, the
What causes frozen shoulder? One of the mysteries of the world.
Yes. And one of my really good friends, this is the only thing that makes me feel better about it, Roz, who is gorgeous, stunning, and super fit, she got a frozen shoulder. So I thought, well, if you can get one, everyone can get one. Okay, for me, for the extracurriculars, Jakarta, I did a photography course, which was great because it meant that you got to get out of your bubble and sort of walk through the kampongs and down to the docks. And
oh, do you have any art?
I do. Nikki, now I'm absolutely shocked you didn't notice when you came to my house.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I didn't. I am so sorry.
So in our playroom, I have four black and white photos of Jakarta that are up in a little corner that I really, really like. There was kind of an infamous older woman who sold fish down at the fish markets. So I've got a picture of her and then down by the water and some kids in our local neighbourhood. And, yeah, I love them. So there you go. There's one thing that's lasted the decluttering over 20 years. I've still got it. In Kuala Lumpur, I was trying to think about extracurricular activities and I've put looking for a job, throwing up in garbage bins and waiting for the world to explode. And that is because Kuala Lumpur was that location, and I always tell people this is why you don't think about how long you're going to be somewhere, because when we moved to KL, we were told we weren't going to be there long. And I think this is why,
so your mind was in a different
thing. You stop joining things and doing things and signing up for things because you think, well, we're going to, you know, get turfed out of here any moment. So, but it was also while we were in KL that 9/11 happened. So the whole travel thing changed, you know, the whole way people felt about going from A to B. And I was desperately trying to get a job in the beginning of the time there, and they didn't employ people part-time, and I had a two-year-old. I then got pregnant.
I was going to say, didn't you have a baby and you were pregnant?
I had a two-year-old and then I got pregnant. And I had the most horrendous pregnancy of all of them, where at about 15 weeks I just became violently ill.
Number two daughter.
Yes. And I always tell her the best bit about it was I walked out of the hospital having had her and I could fit straight into my jeans and I felt great. But from sort of week 15 to week 40 – I either threw up all day or I had diarrhea all night. So that was basically my extra hobby. Libya, baking, because there was nowhere to buy things from. So I learned how to bake, and they had amazing Roman ruins in Libya, which were incredible. And you could go and learn and just walk around these places, Leptis Magna. Amazing, amazing, amazing. Canada, you can imagine, ski lessons, tobogganing, bulb planting. I became obsessed by those, you know, 8 precious weeks of summer for my bulbs to come out. And then in Qatar, it was writing, because that was where I started the blog and then began writing and then, you know, sort of started doing more online stuff. So that question was a great one, Nikki, of to sort of think about, I guess, if there's other people trying to think about what they're going to do, who they might be, what they might be able to do in some of the places they live.
Yeah, I also think it's another reason a season thing. So, you know, like I played golf in South Africa because it was a social skill. We lived on a golf course. That was a way to make friends. I didn't play hockey because whatever. So here and then in the US, again, tennis was very social, but it's just you don't – and then here I came looking for tennis and then my shoulder happened and whatever. But I think – I would love to play tennis again, but I don't ever think I'll play the same way with the same intensity that I played in the US. And so I think that it's – you don't have to – it's great if you've got something that can go from country to country, but don't feel that you have to take it from country to country. There's always something new that you can maybe learn and think about.
Yes. And
don't feel really disappointed if it's not the same.
Oh God, that's good advice, because you see that. You see people arrive somewhere new and they're devastated because they feel that that's who they are and they can't be them. You know, like I, you know, if for instance, I you know, I surfed in such and such. And so, I, you know, that was a big part of my life and I can't do that now. You quite often see that in the Middle East, right, because it is the heat stops a lot of things. And people say, oh, you know, I play tennis four times a week or I do this or I did that. And it's even, Nikki, it can also be your job. If your job doesn't exist, who will I be if I can't do that? I have to be that. And that's what pushes us to find that other thing. Do you know, maybe you're the next Canasta champion and you don't know you're the next Canasta champion.
Okay. Oh, my God, I forgot to put Canasta with tennis in the US. There we go. All right, moving on to favourite things, Kirsty. What are your three favourite things for this week?
Okay, so Henry Hot Dog and I have been watching Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, which is not something that would normally be on my radar. I don't like things like this usually. But I'm digging it.
It's a bit weird.
Yeah, it is. And I'm digging it. And I think I'm digging it because he's liking it. So it's a good one to sort of sit down together. It's a quick one. It's only 30 minutes. So it's one of those ones you can do, okay, you know, before bed, let's watch 30 minutes of that, or we'll do this before dinner or whatever. So the idea of Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist is Zoe, the lead character, sort of begins to hear people's innermost wants and desires through popular song. So all of it kind of kicks off. She goes for an MRI and then she's in the MRI while there's this weather event, which is what causes it. So it's really kooky. You know, the idea is not realistic, but sort of suddenly sort of strangers and friends and co-workers and family start singing their feelings just to her, and they're obviously not aware. So it's almost like she can see inside their minds. But it's just a little bit of fun. It's light. It's okay. What got me there, though, was I did see in the, I think it must have been like in the Chats 10 Looks 3 Facebook group, there was a woman who wrote, oh, my gosh, I've just watched the last episode and I'm devastated. So that's what got me. I was like, really? How could you be?
Oh, that might get me back.
Yeah, I was thinking, why would you be devastated?
I was like, oh, yes.
Yes. So that's what's kind of got me hanging there. I've thought, oh, okay, well, let's see. Okay, the other thing, Nikki, I watched last night, completely different end of the spectrum. I really think you would really enjoy this. Four Corners, which, of course, is the Australian ABC, which is serious journalism. They did an episode called Outbreak on Board. It's about Carnival Cruises. And, of course, the big thing that happened in Australia was, you know, our numbers were very good. We had a cruise ship that docked in Sydney. All of those people were allowed to get off the cruise ship. And
I still can't believe that. That still blows my mind.
I know. Well, this will show you why and how and what happened. And so it's a good sort of expose on Carnival Cruises, because we were all a bit like that in Australia at the time. Everybody was like, what? Like, we all knew that cruise ships were dangerous places.
But didn't, because there was the Diamond Princess, which was the cruise ship off Japan, which was just like alert, cruise ships.
And same company.
Yes. Mm. And the other thing was in January when that happened, they all sent their cruise ships south. So they all sent them down to Australia and New Zealand and stopped cruising around Asia and Europe and sent them down to us and gave great deals. Yeah. Oh, I'm hooked. I'm definitely going to watch it.
No, it is. It's really good. And it sort of shows you that perhaps Carnival weren't really too honest about what was going on board.
What I
find interesting is I have friends that are big cruise believers. I don't know if you have any of these friends, Nikki, but I do.
No, I don't.
Have friends that have been on cruises, they love cruises and they would go on cruises again. And so that's why I found it really interesting, because I was watching the ads because I've never been on a cruise. I've never looked on a boat. I've never looked even at an ad for a boat. So I was watching going, Oh, I get it. But I tell you, it looks like there's two distinctly different crowds on a cruise, too. There's definitely your budget cruisers and your high-level cruisers. And so we had very sophisticated people telling us that, you know, once they were aware, well, they just stopped dining at the buffet. You know, they stayed à la carte and they stayed upstairs. But then you had, you know, Beryl from Rockhampton, who was, you know, there and didn't have a hope in hell. Yeah, worth the watch. It's called Outbreak on Board, Four Corners. You can watch it on ABC iView. And the last thing, Nikki, is a podcast, which has really got me. It's called Dying for Sex. Have you seen it?
I haven't. And when I saw that you've got it here, I'm very
Yeah, so
interested.
it's two
So
best
tell
friends,
me.
and one of them, Nikki and Molly. It's a true story. Molly's diagnosed with stage four breast cancer. And she's married, and she decides, because of her stage four diagnosis, that she's going to leave her husband. And she kind of embarks on these series of sexual adventures. She says that sex makes her feel more alive than anything. But it's just, you know, when you get two girlfriends having a really honest conversation about sex where there's no judgment and it's just fun and giggles and talking about the experience, it's like, you know, coffee with a girlfriend on a Saturday morning after a Friday night out when you're getting the goss. It's a good conversation, and it reminds you too, because Molly's had a double mastectomy, radiation, chemo, reconstructive therapy, like the reconstructive surgery. Surgery, the whole thing, and she is still very attractive to men. And I think in your own self-assessment, you need to remember that there are plenty of people that are going to find you sexually attractive, no matter what's going on, right? Because so what's interesting in this is that Nikki quite often interviews people that Molly's had her involvements with, and you know, yes.
Oh.
And so when they tell you what it was that attracted them to Molly, like there is actually a moment where Molly's in hospital and a man that she's only met once comes to see her, and they have a moment in hospital, and you're like, how? What? Why? And you know, he explains why he finds her so attractive and what it is about her and her personality. So yeah.
Is it a where are they from? Are
They're
they American,
American.
British,
They're
Australian?
American. So that's called
American,
Dying
okay.
for Sex.
Yeah.
Okay, what about you, Nikki? What are you doing? What are your three
Well,
favorites?
something I put on Instagram this week that really struck me, and you messaged me, you said, that's podcast worthy. And I thought, okay, note to self, and quickly copy and paste into three favorite things. So I've got something in there. And it was a Dear Abby letter. And
Yes.
someone had sent a letter to Dear Abby and said, Dear Abby, some time ago you posted a definition of maturity. Can you post it again? And she said, can you dig it up? And she said, oh, yes, here it is. It's actually from my mother. And Dear Abby's mother says, this is maturity, to be able to stick with a job until it's finished, to do one's duty without being supervised, to be able to carry money without spending it, and to be able to bear an injustice without wanting to get
Yeah.
even.
That's and you know, it's not even just maturity, it's being a really good person, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I'm
Like,
guessing that Dear Abby's mother thinks you have to be a really good person to be mature, considered mature.
the whole being able to bear an injustice without wanting to get even.
Yeah, that's tough. I think that's the toughest one there,
Yeah.
really. I mean, I think that the other ones are sort of different versions of difficult, depending on, you know, your motivation, all sorts of different things. But that one is to be able to bear an injustice without wanting to get even is,
Yeah.
yeah, let it
To
go.
do your duty without being supervised, to be able to carry money without spending it. God, they're all great. I loved that when I read that on your Instagram. I thought it was very true. What else?
Okay, so two TV shows. The first one is Dead to Me season two. I just rolled through it. I think one weekend I was having some lying in time, and then my husband walked in and said, "What are you?" And then heard bits of the show and said, "What are you watching?" I said, "It's called Dead to Me season two." He said, "What is it?" I said, "It's a comedy," and it was the last episode of the season, which everything from the last two seasons culminated, and all these people did were dramatic scenes where they were yelling at each other and telling all these home truths and everything. doesn't look like a comedy to me. And then I was saying, well, is it a comedy? Like, it's like a dark comedy or a dramatic comedy, or because there are funny things. I said, I would stop and say, that line was funny. He said, yeah, but in the scheme of the whole scene, like the one funny line.
So, well, Chris, Applegate's character is quite dark in it. I mean, she's got a drinking problem. She's mourning and grief-stricken. And she does very well in it. I think she...
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great because you start off thinking like she's... In the first beginning of season one, you start off feeling that she's the more stable one. Even though she's got this dark character, you think, well, yes, she's the normal, in inverted commas, mother with two kids and just had this terrible thing happen to her. And here's this Looney Tune who's just like trying to be friends with her and whatever. And then as it gets to the end of the second season, the whole tables turn almost. Like because of the events that have happened, if you haven't seen Dead to Me season two yet. And you're thinking, oh, no, Christina Applegate is the Looney Tunes one and this other woman is, in fact, this very stable, sort of, and she's can bear an injustice without wanting to get even, I guess, is where she's got to in her life. So she's obviously the mature one in the relationship. So that was it. Season two, Dead to Me. I haven't done, which is on my agenda. Have you watched Killing Eve season three?
No, I've watched the first episode of Killing Eve season three. Oh, and it
can't be that good.
No, it is. It's just, I don't know, I found it really, we haven't even gone back to the Game of Thrones thing. Like we did all of season one. I think we did.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we did two episodes.
Yeah, but after you see the end of season one, you have to watch the first episode of season two, surely.
Yeah.
Because it finishes on the cliffhanger.
Kind of, but I did think it was going to happen. Like I did, without ruining it for everyone. Yeah. I don't know. I did.
Seen Game of Thrones 10 years after it started.
Yes. I don't know. It's not, I feel like I'm persisting because I just keep thinking.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah. We don't. So we had this conversation the other night. So on our Friday night Zoom girls group, a girl, she's Polish, and she said, you know, it's so funny because she says, you know, I didn't even know the internet existed until 1990 something, like all these things that she's never, songs she's never heard of, cultural references we have to explain to, like, she's very open about asking about because she lived in Poland during the communist, she grew up during the communist era, and they didn't have access to sort of contemporary, what we would call Western culture.
Yes.
But she said, look, I've started this, my dad wrote a porno podcast, and you know, the porn's not that great, and I don't think the people are that funny. And we said, oh my God, really? And we all talked about how we would be laughing out loud in public places or crying on trains and all this kind of stuff. And she said, should I keep going? And we all said, no, don't keep going, because if you're not enjoying it, there's no point. Like, the whole point is it's pointless, and you're meant to laugh because it's pointless funny in a way.
But I am struggling, Nikki, and I wonder if she's a little bit the same, or maybe not. Maybe she's found things she loves. But I have struggled during COVID to do binge watching of things and reading. I haven't done as much reading.
Yeah, I've done
very, yeah, I have done very short, like I've done short essays, or I've read, you know, I feel like I read the paper from front to back, do you know, like in my Apple News app, you know, because you can get all of these things to watch and read and whatever. And so I feel like I'm doing that. But I really haven't sat down with a novel. I have not binge watched anything. And what I've found, because Greg will be sick in bed for sort of, you know, 3 or 4 days, and I obviously can't sit in bed watching things with him while he's sick in bed, because then, you know, someone's got to feed children and drive places and whatever. So he's watched Ozark and he's watched a couple of things he knows that I'm not particularly interested in. But, yeah, I just haven't, and I have heard other people say that about COVID times, that they haven't been able to focus.
Well, she did report back last Friday, 2 weeks later, and said, I kept going and I quite like it now, even though we all told her not to keep going. So I was quite happy to hear that. But I do hear what you're saying, and I do agree. And in the beginning, I found it because I was so busy with work and kids and no cleaner and, you know, they're doing everything and having everyone at home, which making much more mess. I found it really hard to do podcasts, which I love and which are my lifeblood, because I was working. So when I'm working, I had to focus on that. And then I couldn't focus on other things, you know what I mean? So I couldn't have my earphone in like I might if I am in the office, because being in the office at home meant I had three co-workers who were different to my at-work co-workers who required different levels of attention.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I have found it different as well. I haven't read a book. I have read lots of long-form articles. And I've done only recently, I think I've just immerse myself in some binging and stuff. So the other thing that I've binged, and my last favorite thing for the week, is on Netflix, Sweet Magnolias. Now I want to know if you've seen it. It's kind of like a cross between Heart of Dixie and Friday Night Lights for the 20s. And if you're an absolute, absolute fan of Friday Night Lights, don't yell at me if you like it. I mean, if you watch it and say, this is nothing like Friday Night Lights. But what it is it's set in the South. It's based on a series of books, apparently. It's three friends in a southern town that are near Charleston. You don't really – it's called Serenity. I think the town's called Serenity. I don't know that such a town exists. But and it's a best story about the adult lives and the teenage lives, which Friday Night Lights was, of course, as well. Heart of Dixie was more just about adult lives and living in the South and being a bit crazy. But so it's – and then when you look at it, there's a lot of people you think you recognize. You're like, oh, where do I know that person from? You know, they're just sort of all these people who've been in shows, you know, like the love interest, the baseball coach used to be, he was the guy that April married on Grey's Anatomy. But, you know, I wouldn't know his name to save my life. But you're like, oh, I've seen him before. Where have I seen him? And, you know, you Google him. And but the two people who really stand out to me in terms of people you know. So Chris Klein from like American Pie. Like he plays a dopey teenager that all the girls like, really. Basically, that's been his shtick for a lot of years. He now is the middle-aged divorcing dad who's a doctor who's knocked up his nurse assistant. Oh. And no one likes him. And his knocked up nurse assistant is played by Jamie Lynn Spears.
Oh, so you see fame.
Britney's sister. And so it's so you look at her and you're like, wow, that's a Spears. You know, that's Britney's sister. But what's her name again? And you know, it's quite – look, I just rolled through the episodes sort of over the last couple of days up in Copenhagen.
I think we're all learning this about you though, Nikki. I think we're learning that you do trash American TV like no one else. Like you –
I do.
You can.
I'm very –
you
can.
I think that's very – because everyone needs that light – just let's just roll on.
And that's what I'm saying. I found very hard to do serious stuff during COVID. I found it hard. And I've also, you know, all the stuff with my husband and my kids and everything that's been going on lately, I've just needed total escapism. And so podcasting and everything. So I don't even listen to that much politics.
Yeah, if we were in the 80s, you would have read Barbara Cartland or
correct.
I've got
some Mills and Boone still on the shelf. that's the other thing. I've still got books from when I first left Australia. So
just on that though, because usually around this time you would be deeply, deeply immersed in American politics. That would be what would be driving you.
Yeah.
You'd be really into it. So do you think that has kind of waned as well because of COVID?
I don't think it's waned because of COVID. I think that it's waned because of what I can cope with right now. Like my husband is still right into it. And he'll tell you anything. He'll tell you about Trump's latest tweet and all sorts of things. I'm like, what happened? I'm not just that into the day-to-day of it. I just keep my high-level stuff going. Mm-hmm. I listen to a couple of political podcasts about polls and things, about public opinion. I listen to it actually a great part. I'll say that for next week. Anyway, but I think that I love politics and I will follow it and I'll stay up all night in November and watch the election results come in as I did last time there was an election. But I just, I've just had to pull back a bit.
Mm.
But, I might not know. I mean, I think the things, the big things get covered so much that you can't miss them. But I would know sort of all the things around the big things that I probably don't know all those things right now. So
yeah. Yeah.
Sweet Magnolias, trashy yeah. American TV. Number one on American Netflix when I looked at it yesterday.
Okay, Nikki Moffat, I'm going to let you go and get off to doing your three different school drop-offs and
drive
pickups.
Drive another child to school.
Yes.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
Good luck with that, and I'll see you on Friday for drinks.
See you then. Bye.